accession number 26743, Reel 1.
Acting Subconductor Karoya, Reel 1. Can you tell me if there was a tradition of military service in your family background?
My father volunteered in the First World War, a Londoner. He was sent to Reading to join the Royal Berkshire Regiment. My parents were a couple of comedians, and this came up several times. The march past of the Royal Berkshire Regiment was to be a farmer's boy, and my mother told us children that before he went to Reading, he couldn't say definitely that what he was looking at was a cow or a pig. Joking. He served for more or less 4 years in the trenches. He went in a private, he came out a private. I've got a slip of paper which says that he was brought to notice for his bravery in action. For 9 months, unscathed, for 9 months, he then went to Mesopotamia, where in 9 months he was wounded 3 times. We were then living, I've always lived, in Cuba Street, 40 or 50 houses, nothing on the other side because we looked straight into West India Docks. And one day in the Union Castle berth came a castle berth we hadn't seen before. The name escapes me now, but my father went absolutely bananas. It was the hospital ship that had brought him home from Mesopotamia. My mother, a comedian, my father said, yes, I've got a spoon somewhere, and somewhere the spoon there is this, the castle boat named in the groove of the spoon. And my mother said, one spoon, Charlie, one spoon. Pretty nurses coming home, they could have sold you a whole canteen. Yes, oh yes, he had a very full First World War experience.
Was there any professional military service, regular service that you
Oh no, involved? No, just in the way that men, young men in 1914 called to the colours right across the board, poor men, and he served with the Royal Berkshire Regiment all that year.
When were you born? What's your date of birth?
My birth?
Yes.
Funnily enough, I shall be 84 on the 21st of this month. I was born on December the 21st, 1919.
Growing up between the wars, things were happening, particularly as you're getting into adolescence. When you were 10, 12, you know, things started happening in Europe. Do you remember when you first suspected there might be another war in Europe?
Well, one saw the fascists and communists at loggerheads in the East End of London, Mosley. And yes, I suppose, you know, I worked in an engineering office, bridge builders, who, as the war came along, what they were doing, they were strengthening the sterns of merchant ships before the gun was placed, because had they just fired the gun in the merchant ship, well, it just kind of blown the rivets out of the back. And we also made Oro Pisa floats. They were something to do with mines, you know.
Do you remember when you started doing that work of reinforcing the decks of merchantmen?
Very much after the war had started.
Oh, so not yeah. Before the war?
Just perhaps a little before, but my memory would be...
I mean, were you interested in politics as a young man? Did it take your interest, or were you interested in other things?
Well, no. I mean, you're born in East London. There was a song we sang, you know, vote, vote, vote for Billy Smithers, you know, smack old Dewar in the eye. If it wasn't for the King, we'd do the bugger in, and he won't come voting anymore. No, I suppose you were influenced by the background of... comparative poverty, although I never saw it as poverty, you know. If I say now, I could go on, I'll tell you off the record, that in the 50 houses, all rented, some to the council, there was only one house that was privately owned, and that was by my father, a bricklayer. And I mean, I've handled the deeds in the last 2 years, because we have been concerned about it. That area now is called the Millennium Quarter, and it's going to be developed. And my father paid £250 for it in 1927, and we have just sold it for £310,000.
Yeah. That's inflation.
Yeah.
Do you remember if there was a particular time or a particular event that triggered under the idea that there is going to be a war rather than there might be a war?
Well,
in your mind?
There was in 38, the beginning of the Home Guard, and I joined, and I had on my arm LDV, Local Defence Volunteers, and we linked up with a yard of about 300 men, and we did exercises. And this is true. I went out with a plater called Muldoon, and I had a gun like you'd make for a four-year-old out of plywood, just a shape, nothing.
Yeah.
And Jerry Muldoon had the equivalent of a 200-gram coffee jar, half filled with stones. And I went bang, 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 and he shook it like that. And that is true.
Did you do any military training or pre-military training when you were at school?
No.
Scouting or anything like that?
No, I went to a very large, massive Docklands Settlement Club where on one night I boxed, on another night I ran, on two other nights we were in the gym, on Saturday we played football, and Sunday was the only time I didn't go there.
But when did you leave school? What age were you when you...
I would have thought 15, coming up to 16.
And did you go straight into the engineering firm?
I went to the engineering firm. I worked in the works office, and but for the war, I would have gone into the drawing office, where there was about 30 draftsmen.
So were you an apprentice?
No, not an apprentice, but it was a foregone conclusion that the two before me had moved out of the works office into the drawing office. And basically, what were we doing? I think practically every Marks and Spencer that was built, Bovis did the brickwork and we did the steelwork. And all the cinemas that were going up to, that was the...
Do you remember the day that war broke out in Europe? Did that have any impact on you particularly?
Well, in as much as my mother was evacuated with my two sisters to Wootton Bassett, I think that's in Wiltshire, and my father and I. And where I worked was in the reserved occupation. And I got something like 6 months reservation, not called up. I should have gone normally. And when the manager said, right, we'll get you another 6 months, I said, I'm being embarrassed by going to the club and hearing of the boys, letters from the boys. So no thank you. So I went. And that's when I went in May to the Royal West Kents.
This was May 1940. Did you have any idea of what service you wanted to join? Were you specifically committed to going into the army? Or?
Yes, completely ignored. I had a very religious and sacred background. I was more or less of pacifist leanings, and I wanted to go into the Royal Navy, into minesweeping, where, you know, I thought you save life, you weren't taking it. But it was completely ignored, and I was sent in the army.
How did that process go on then? What happened? Presumably you got call-up paper in the post.
Yes, got call-up paper in the post.
What happened then?
I went to the local Labour Exchange to sign on, and then I went to Whipps Cross Hospital, You know, it's for a medical.
Was that a thorough medical?
A thorough medical, yes, you know. Asked what disease you'd had. I mean, I was as fit as a fiddle. So that when I went to 300 to 400 at the Royal West Kent Barracks and they had a parade, and with the West Kents they picked nine, three lots of threes, to join the parade. I was one of the nine. I was very, very fit. I never smoked, I never drank. I'd run at White City, came last, but I was playing later to play top amateur football.
What sort of distance were you running? Were you middle distance or sprint?
The longer ones, the mile, yes.
Yeah. What happened to you then when you arrived at Maidstone? You got to the depot of the Royal West Kents. What did they do with you when you...
Well, mainly square
up?
Bashing. You know, you were talked, you were taken to the rifle range. A boy's anti-tank gun you were told how to use. You were also told it was pretty useless. But the Bren gun, I was taught how to use the Bren gun, and also a Thompson submachine gun. And of course, square bashing, which, as I say, I was really good at because I was fit and I liked it. I really liked it.
What was it you liked particularly about the drill?
Well, the drill itself, you know, kind of halt, about turn, you know, and yeah, open ranks.
What sort of accommodation were you in at Maidstone?
Probably about 16 to 20 I was in. Yes, it was clean and decent, yeah.
Barrett
and the food
room.
Was good. I had no moans about...
Was it old barracks or was it hutted?
It was Invicta Lines, they called it. I was told to report to Invicta Lines. And with the, you know, it was the one of the main barracks of the Royal West Kents.
And where were the other men in your barrack room from? You must have got to know them to some extent. What sort of...
Mainly around London.
Yeah.
Yeah, mainly around London. Yes.
And you're saying the food was good?
The food was good. You couldn't grumble at the food.
How was the instruction in drill and skill at arms carried out? Who was doing that?
Well, I remember he came from Edenbridge and his name was Sergeant Cross. And he said, I'm well named. And I think he liked me because I was good. There was a fellow there, I think his name was Bainbridge, he couldn't do anything right. As his left leg went forward, his left arm went forward. Shocking, you know. And on one occasion we were doing Bainet fixing, you know. When I say fix, you don't fix, but when I say bayonets, you do. That's the general instruction, as you know. And on this occasion, he was in the first row, middle row. I was behind him, and he had got this bayonet on. And from a distance, he praised Bainbridge and said, he's actually done it. Well, when they came to slope arms and put it up there, so this bayonet came off over the head of the middle one down onto me. I ran, of course, you know, God, dear old Lord. I mean, he had said in the bayonets that if he had his way, he'd give Bainbridge a medal as big as a frying pan, you know, because then I won the bone. And, I mean, he really tore into him. The others didn't have to run anywhere because it wasn't coming. It was coming for me. And then he turned on me, and boy, did he unleash so-and-so. He said, you don't move, you know, so-and-so. I said, Sergeant, like the idiot in Pompeii, Vesuvius, when the lava's coming round his feet, he doesn't move. Yeah, spoiled me, but he liked me. In his way, he liked me, and we got on like a house of fire. That's why I remembered his name, and we've been back to Edenbridge many, many times, not to see him, but I know Edenbridge in Kent.
How did you find the discipline? Did you find it... You took to it? Were you able to accept the discipline, or did you find it
difficult. Oh, I like discipline. In the latter part of life, I taught. And for 3 years, I taught at an approved school. And from right from the top, with these 92 boys, we've sentenced to 2 years in an approved school. It came fairly easily. So that, no, I taught it, I had difficulties, but when I went to the normal school, locally, my reputation, not mine, but the fact that I was coming from an approved school, and I, of the 80 who were in this secondary modern, anybody who put me outside the first two as disciplinary and want their heads checking, you know, no trouble. And I liked teaching, and I only left it in the mid-60s because I wanted more money. So I bought a news agency with wholesale tobacco. We sold wholesale tobacco because I had 110 cigarette machines. I didn't smoke. Do you smoke?
No.
No? Barbara doesn't smoke. Our children don't smoke. So goodness knows how many I've led into cancer wards. I'm not proud of it looking back, but I thoroughly enjoyed it.
What about the other chaps in your barrack room and in your squad at the depot? Did they accept the discipline without struggling against it?
Yes, yes. Sergeant Cross, having sworn at us on the boss name, came round to the barracks and, you know, just had a yarn, you know. And we gave him, you know, what was in our parcels from home and, yes.
Now, you were joining the army at a time when there were some dramatic events going on, because you joined in May 1940. On the 13th of May, the Germans invaded in the West and so on. Were you aware of what was going on at the time?
Oh, yes, the Sudetenland, and that came later, you know. Oh, and the threat of Hitler, so I understood that.
But in 1940, when you were at the depot, this was when the Germans invaded France.
Yes.
Do you remember hearing about that at the time?
I think I would have taken it in my stride. I kept nothing like now, you know. I mean, basically, taking hold of a paper as a boy, I read all the back pages about sport, not the front. Now, I will hear four or five times the news during the day and never look at the back pages.
So, you how long were you actually at? You were at Maidstone from May till July.
Yes.
And were you a member of the Royal West Kents when you were
No,
at Maidstone?
Never, never. No. No. They were there purely to teach us, you know, the square bashing side, you know.
But was everybody in your squad in the Ordnance Corps?
Yes, all Ordnance Corps.
When did you join the Ordnance Corps? Was this at the recruiting station or was it later? And did you have a choice?
No choice. I mean, my choice wanted to be minesweepers. But they said, go to the Royal Ordnance, go to the Royal West Kents. And everybody there was in Ordnance.
Why do you think you had been put into the Ordnance Corps? What was it that...
No, nothing to do with background. The people who went there were just ordinary, everyday sort of fellows. Some in offices, some outside offices.
So it wasn't your engineering background?
No, nothing.
So you had May, June, July, so that's 3 months of basic training.
Yes.
And then, had you done any tactics while you were at Maidstone?
No exercises outside. Route marches, but
nothing
marches,
more.
Nothing more.
What about the physical training? Was there a great emphasis on that? PT?
I don't remember. No, I don't remember that. I would have excelled at that because that's all from 14 to going into the army. That's all I'd done, and I belonged to a club where they'd won the South of England. You know, kind of. I could vault and.
So you went off to the Central Ordnance Depot at Chilwell in Nottingham.
Yes.
How did you get there? Was this by train or by some other means?
No, by train.
Yeah,
by train.
Did you know what you were going to be doing when you got there before you arrived?
No, I had no real idea what.
No idea. So what did happen? What were you doing at Chilwell?
Mainly working at night on indents. passing them from tank regiments and armoured companies, and it dealt only with MT, motor transport, and tanks. And occasionally you went to a lecture on what. It was a bit vague, you know. I think more could have been made of it, but.
So you were working in the administrative
side, yeah. Yes.
Who were you working for? Who was in charge of you directly?
I don't know, just the top in Chilmore Depot, that was it, you know.
But were you in an office with other?
Yes, with others, yep.
So do you have any idea of how many of you there were in the office? And
well, there must have been hundreds, because there was hundreds of young women, civilians, not ATS, just hundreds of young women. That's the haziest of the lot, I should think.
And what sort of living condition did you have at Chilwell?
Yes, decent again. Yeah. Yes, you know.
Was this in a barracks or was it huts?
On one occasion we moved into a new block where the thing that came number one was polishing, bumping as we call it, bumping the really polished floors of a very good job. It was a very well built, very well built block. But no, I had no arguments about the lack of.
And you said you were working mainly at night. What were you doing in the daytime?
Well, sleeping and getting, you know, and then really there wasn't a lot of free time. I mean, you slept till about one, and then you got up and you went out, and then you were on again, you know, in the evening. I can't say exactly when, whether it was 7 or 8 or.
Was Chilwell working 24 hours a day at that time?
Oh, yes, yes, oh, yes. Yes.
So you would get in a request for
stores,
supplies,
yes.
And then what did you have to do with that?
Well, just certify it, you know, and put the right, I suppose, number, or, you know, AB150, you know, so that, and then it was selected by. I don't know that I did any selecting, but others must have done the selecting of it. And then it was dispatched. But it wasn't very long there, was I? I wasn't terribly long there.
Now, you're saying that you were there in September, and in September you went to headquarters of the Third Corps. In Shropshire.
In Shropshire.
Yeah. What were you doing there at headquarters Third Corps?
Well, I was part of HQ 3 Corps. We were in what was called the dump. It was an old cinema, and that was chock-a-block full of stores. Again, looking at indents and passing the stuff out to Corps troops. And virtually, HQ 3 Corps took over the town, you know. Officers' mess were in the old rectory, and then there was a sergeant's mess here, sergeant's mess there. We were just outside the centre of the town in a very large house called Oakfield.
Yes. And where were you living? Were you in a billet?
Well, I was living in this big
in
house.
Oakfield,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Were you still working at night, or were you on?
No, that was during the day.
No.
The 4 months I was at Whitchurch, I consider that to be probably the greatest part of my life. It was absolutely wonderful. Absolutely wonderful, every possible way. I was playing football for the Corps. I was being shouted at by a warrant officer who thought I was an absolute bloody idiot. I could tell you stories about, well, I was only there 4 months, but I don't think that comes in your.
Why did you think you were an idiot, this warrant officer?
Well, do you want to know this?
Yes.
Why did you think
all,
I was
it's all part of it.
Why did I think I was an idiot?
Why did he?
Well,
think
on one occasion,
idiot?
Somebody had to go down to the Forgonis and bring donuts. So you'd say, hey, oh, I have a couple. So you'd come back with about 36. The first time I ever did it, you were told to take a new cycle which was waiting to go out. So I'm coming back down a hill, got 36 donuts here, and at the bottom a tank division was going through the town, and our core police, policemen was like that. I thought it was just, but it was one of those where there's only one break.
And it was on the wrong side.
It was on the wrong side. I could see myself going under the tank tracks, and I was only stopped by hitting the policeman dead on. All the donuts went all over the place. I apologised. So, what did you hurt? But he put me on a charge. Oh. I'd go back for more donuts. Where the bloody hell have you been? You know, for the 15 or so of us that were in. Told him what had happened. Anyway, he discussed it at the warrant officer's mess, you know. Was a warrant officer of the provost said, this is so. Well, I think he's an absolute idiot. Bob Borwell must have said that, W.O. He said, but it beats me. He said, but he's got an undisputed place in the core football team. He said, and on the couple of runs that we've had, we're 300 or 400 start. He can't beat a professional who comes first, but there's only one person who comes second, that's him. There must be something about that. I haven't seen it. The other side that I haven't seen, I used to pass going from Oakfields to the dump, a very attractive young woman. Oh, by the way, I'd gone in, I'm linked with Rotary, but coming from East London, it meant nothing to me. It was just a name. But in the town, the ladies, Rotary, in a will, which my wife Barbara belongs to, had a very nice canteen. I'd buried the 7 members of my family. I was pretty low. And suddenly, this lady's by my side said, are you feeling well? I said, oh, I'm fine. She said, you've had 3, 4, if not 4 Horlicks while you've been here this evening. So I then had to make out, I didn't want to tell you so. Anyway, she bought me some aspirins, another Horlicks and so. Meanwhile, at the same time, I'm passing a young girl about my own age, in the 20s, 21, 22, who couldn't have ignored me. If I'm walking on that side, she walked in the gutter and never, ever spoke to me or acknowledged me. On one occasion, she stopped and said, I have to ask you, how are you feeling? I said, I'm feeling fine. I said, I had a run yesterday or played football, you know, just show how well I was. She said, well, that's not what Mummy said. And it came to me, I thought, oh my God. I said, was that your mother at the Rotary Club? Yes, she said. So I said, oh, what a wonderful, wonderful woman. So kind and so lovely. And I sort of lost my mother. And I said, she came so near to being it. I said, can we share a secret? Can you say yes? Go along, with, I was under the weather. Yes, she said, I won't tell her. I'll just say I talked. Yes, you're getting on. But what I didn't ask her to promise, because I didn't know that she was Bob Borwell's girlfriend.
What had happened to your family?
Let's go back.
Yeah.
So she goes back and tells Bob Borwell what had happened. And of course, right, bloody did she made us feel. I got another, you know.
Another bollocking.
Who was this person who looked after me? She was a family called Joyce. I got down there, I've got Antique Roadshow, they went to Whitchurch, and they interviewed the Joyce family. They were the biggest clockmakers in Europe, possibly the world. And if you go to Lime Street Station in Liverpool, there was, unless they've ordered it, there's a big clock there. Joyce Whitchurch.